The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Cruel summer, record high gas prices at play in these numbers, 8.6% year-over-year inflation. That is, again, the highest since 1981.
Does the White House see any relief in these numbers for Americans in the near future? And if so, when?
So, look, the president very much understands, and we very much understand, that we've got uncomfortably high inflation. And about half of that was due to food and energy, which can be almost directly tied to Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And so
it's not just that, you know, it's not prices are rising. I get it. I get the world oil markets are up. But as you know, prices are rising for everything.
And the president understands that.
But we've never seen anything like Putin's tax on both food and gas. Putin's price hike is hitting America hard.
Before Putin began amassing troops at the border, if you really isolate what's going on here, it's because Vladimir Putin.
Energy, energy, energy. And you know, there's so many comments here about, oh, the administration can only do so much. What was the forward guidance with this administration on energy? We know the answer. Maybe they can't get things to happen faster, but by giving positive forward guidance, by not closing pipelines, by not talking pre-election about how much they don't like fossil fuel, maybe things would have turned out a bit different.
Brian, it's true, of course, that Russia's war in Ukraine is impacting oil prices. Yes, but I promise you the landscaper 2 days ago I talked to at the gas pump who was trying to fill up two cans and backpack blowers and mowers in his truck was not going to you, Putin.
Look, they hate fossil fuels. And a lot of the numbers that I think Brian's really good, but a lot of the numbers he talked about are not true. I mean, we're not producing as much as we did under President Trump. The idea that it's European... That it's the Europeans that are causing natural gas to go up a lot isn't true. We just were unprepared for this particular moment and don't have enough pipelines. Look, they hate fossil fuels. They don't want to go to the Permian and be seen with Scott Sheffield from Pioneer. They just don't want to do it. They think it's a really bad thing for the election. Saudi Arabia, not Permian. So the Saudis are better friends of the United States than Western Texas. All right, fine.
Quite a bit to unpack from that big montage. All of those clips were from Friday, June 10th, and it sounds like the regime media, or what we traditionally would think of as the propaganda press, is turning on the regime. What is happening here? It seems like a lot of them are finally starting to get hit by the economic problems that average Americans are getting hit by. And of course, you see in that clip, the Biden representatives, there are three or four of them, spread throughout that clip. All of them blame Putin, 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 Putin's tax, Putin's price hike. There was that one White House rep when Jim Schwedo said, you know, it's not just Putin. And she kind of seemed taken aback by that, completely shocked that there could be any other blame to be cast on anyone other than Vladimir Putin. And then you had the MSNBC analyst saying, this administration came in talking about how they wanted to stop drilling oil. It was a negative message to begin with. So no wonder the oil companies and gas prices are going up. And then my favorite in all of those was Jim Cramer, who 2 or 3 months ago could not stop raving about the economy is hot. This is the greatest economy I've ever seen, blah, blah, blah. I mean, towing every line that he possibly could for this administration, now coming in and saying their numbers are wrong, they're lying about these numbers, or they're being deceptive, they hate fossil fuels, the forward messaging was wrong, they'd rather go to Saudi Arabia than to the oil companies in Western Texas. And then he says it's not true. This, or Donald Trump was producing more oil, or the United States produced more oil under Donald Trump than under Joe Biden. It almost sounded like some of these news commentators were just moments away from saying, we want Donald Trump back. How much longer? Maybe before they start talking about the election steal. Well, we'll talk quite a bit more about that Saudi Arabia story and Jim Cramer there in just a bit. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston. I'll be your guest host for today's show. Mr. Stephen Fleury will be doing tomorrow's show over a Zoom call. I believe he's going to be in Rapid City for that. There will be a Celtic Throne show tonight in Rapid City, and then following that, there will be one in Amarillo, Texas. You can see all of the times or the cities and the dates where Celtic Throne will be at CelticThrone.com. If you have any comments or feedback for the show, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Of course, you can listen to the show or watch it live at thetrumpet.com weekdays, 11 a.m. Central Time. And then you can, of course, download the show from your favorite podcast app anytime you want after that. Well, Friday was when the new inflation numbers came in. This is from CNBC. The consumer price index rose 8.6% in May from a year ago, the highest increase since December 1981. I feel like they have just written this lead paragraph for every article they've published on this for the last year, and then they just update that percentage. Core inflation, excluding food and energy, rose 6%. Both were higher than expected. And you see those analysts on CNN, on CNBC, on MSNBC, all very critical of this administration. I thought that one commentator, I can't remember his name, he was talking about how negative this administration was coming in to the White House when they were campaigning, talking about how they didn't want to drill. So obviously, this administration is not going to look to that as a solution, just as a reminder to what he's referring to. Here's a clip of Joe Biden during some of the debates, the Democrat debates in 2020. This is clip 6.
Three consecutive American presidents have enjoyed stints of explosive economic growth due to a boom in oil and natural gas production. As president, would you be willing to sacrifice some of that growth, even knowing potentially that it could displace thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of blue-collar workers, in the interest of transitioning to that greener economy?
The answer is yes. Number one, no more subsidies for fossil fuel industry. No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period. Ends.
So he's happy to see Americans suffer. He's happy to see the workers on the Keystone Pipeline lose their jobs because it's all in the name of climate change. It's all in the name of green energy. It's so insulting, and it's so, I mean, nothing illustrates the disconnect between the political class and the average person perhaps more than this story. I mean, when they just come out and say, well, buy that $50,000 electric car because the average American can, of course, afford that $600 a month payment when they're complaining about gas going up, you know, 50 cents a gallon. Jim Cramer, he mentioned how this administration, they said that they're reaching out to oil companies, but they're not. They're not discussing how the United States can produce more oil. They just want to blame Vladimir Putin. And basic economics, the United States has a lot of oil. So if we can produce more of that, that would drive the price down. If you have more of it, it shouldn't really matter how much Vladimir Putin or Saudi Arabia is pumping. But now Joe Biden, rather than going to those oil companies in West Texas, like Cramer mentioned there, he's going to Saudi Arabia, reaching out to Saudi Arabia. And if you'll remember, over the last 2 years, President Trump, he reached out with Saudi Arabia a lot. They signed peace agreements with Israel and the UAE, a lot more oil coming in from over there. And how critical the Democrats were for him, or of him, reaching out to what they said was this, and it is in many ways, an authoritarian regime. There was that Washington Post reporter, Jamal Khashoggi, who was killed. And they said, how dare Donald Trump do business with the Saudis for anything? Of course, it's okay to do business with China by their logic. Those are just concentration camps. But Saudi Arabia, that's a no-go zone. Of course, they hate it because Donald Trump was doing it. And now that they're in office, it's not that bad because, well, they're just not Donald Trump. That's apparently how they think. This is Glenn Greenwald writing about Biden's shift to Saudi Arabia. He says, Joe Biden's submissive and highly revealing embrace of Saudi despots. Perhaps the most vocal critic of Trump's ongoing willingness to maintain ties with the Saudi regime were then-Democratic presidential candidates Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. As a recent CNN compilation of those statements demonstrate, in the years prior to taking office, President Joe Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, and many of their administration's top officials harshly criticized President Donald Trump's lack of action against Saudi Arabia. In 2019, during a Democratic primary debate, Biden vowed, "We are going to, in fact, make them pay," speaking of Saudi Arabia, "pay the price and make them, in fact, the pariah that they are," adding that there is very little social redeeming value in the present government in Saudi Arabia. Harris similarly scolded Trump for his ongoing relationship with the Saudis, complaining on Twitter in October 2019 that Trump has yet to hold Saudi officials accountable, adding, "Unacceptable. America must make it clear that violence toward critics and the press won't be tolerated." And they're speaking out one side of their mouth. These people, that the Obama administration, the Biden administration, they are signing arms deals with Saudi Arabia throughout Obama's presidency. Of course, there's the big oil coming in. So you can't have it both ways. Obviously, the reason they hated this was because Donald Trump was the one doing it. But now, Joe Biden, the rumor is he's planning a visit to Saudi Arabia in a month or two to appeal to them to pump more oil. Greenwald continues, "It appears that Biden is planning a pilgrimage to Riyadh to visit his Saudi partners in person. Last week, the New York Times reported that Biden has decided to travel to Saudi Arabia this month to rebuild relations with the oil-rich kingdom at a time when he is seeking to lower gas prices at home and isolate Russia abroad. During the trip, Biden will meet with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman." The rationale offered by the New York Times for Biden's planned trip was virtually identical to the arguments Trump used in 2018. "The visit represents the triumph of real politic over moral outrage," according to foreign policy experts. So now that Trump is gone, suddenly all those critiques of Saudi Arabia aren't relevant. It's totally okay now to do business with that authoritarian regime over there. But not, as Jim Cramer said, not the U.S. oil companies in Western Texas. We're closer friends now with Saudi Arabia than the CEOs of the American oil companies. This is a problem that would be very easy to solve in some ways if this administration wasn't so anti-American, wasn't trying to destroy America. How else can you explain it? It's America under attack. This administration, I mean, they could not have broadcast it more clearly that they hate oil. They hate drilling. I mean, Joe Biden said it himself. A video surfaced over the weekend of his energy secretary, Granholm. We've played a few clips from her. She's the one that every time says, well, it's great if you drive an electric car because you don't have to look at or you don't have to worry about the price of the gas on that sign as you drive by it. But I watched a video the other weekend. It was like a little mini documentary following people that went on road trips driving their electric car. And yeah, you don't have to look at the price of gas on that billboard, but you really have to stress out trying to find a charging station anywhere. And not only that, you then have to just sit in your car for 2 to 3 hours while it charges. We played that clip of that senator the other day, or the congresswoman bragging about how happy she was to finally own her electric car and to be able to drive from Detroit to Washington, D.C. Didn't mention how much time she spent sitting on the side of the road or how many times she might have had to get her car towed because the meter that reads in there that says you've got 150 miles left in this charge, but then you plug in your iPod or whatever, and then that drops to 100 miles and you can't make it to your next charging station. Anyway, Granholm was in this music video. They all seem to do these corny music videos talking about how horrible gasoline was, how horrible oil was. And obviously, I'm not going to play the clip. It's very corny. But all of these adults behaving like children seem to have their music videos whining about oil or lamenting or fearing climate change. Following up a bit on that montage at the start and how the media are turning on Joe Biden, his poll numbers, they're the lowest they've been now, and it's already lower than any president, I think, since Truman. So that would be, what, the last 70 years? Lower than Donald Trump. This was the man the Democrats said, the adults are back in the room. There will be stability. We will have civility now. And he's more unpopular than ever. This clip this morning, this is from Joe Scarborough. He's talking to one of his economics analysts. And they're really patting Joe Manchin on the back now for blocking that Build Back Better bill. Build Back Better bill, BBB. This is clip two.
I just wonder what would have happened if progressives had gotten their $6 trillion wish earlier this year.
Yeah, in an ironic way, you almost have to thank Joe Manchin for blocking that, because $6.5 trillion of spending in this economy would make these numbers look small. We had a huge budget deficit. We had an unbelievably aggressive reaction by the Fed to the pandemic. You can kind of understand why they were trying, but they just tried too hard. And now we're all going to pay the consequences in a very, very tough environment over the next year or two while this gets sorted out.
And by the way, I wouldn't even say ironically thank Joe Manchin. You can just thank Joe Manchin if you're glad that interest rates aren't even higher.
That is just unbelievable to come from those people. That clip was from this morning. I didn't have time to go back and find the clips. But Joe Manchin and Sinema are like the Democrats' supervillains. For the last year, Joe Biden has done nothing but complain about them. Joe Scarborough, exactly the same way. I'm sure that montage will surface later today. And look at these individuals, Mika and Joe, trying to abandon the ship that they've helped to sink. They loved Build Back, I cannot say it, Build Back Better. I cannot believe they would pick a tongue twister like that for that bill. So they pushed that relentlessly over the last year. How dare the Republicans try to block an infrastructure plan? How dare Manchin? It was the headlines, well, one senator gets in the way of America being able to rebuild itself. Well, no, it's actually 51 senators. But Joe Scarborough, I mean, he had some choice words for Manchin. But now, the economy is really bad. And it was so predictable. It's so predictable when you're pumping trillions of dollars into the economy. What is going to happen? You devalue the currency. Anybody could tell you that was going to happen. You don't have to be an economics expert to know that. Joe Manchin votes against it. It doesn't go through. They're very upset. Mika and Joe, very upset with Joe Manchin over that. Oh, but now the inflation numbers are coming in. Well, boy, we're really happy Joe Manchin blocked that. Another $6 trillion, interest rates would have been even higher. Thank you, Joe Manchin, for standing up to us as we helped try to drive this country into the ground. They are jumping ship, the ship that they helped to sink. They want to get out of it acting like, well, they were just on the right side all along, on following along with Biden just failing on every front. There was this summit of the Americas. I think that was during last week. So it's supposed to be a meeting between leaders of North and South America. It was in Los Angeles. And this was, you know, the big thing was going to be talking about illegal immigration, the migrant caravans, the border crisis, and the leaders of the three Northern Triangle nations, those are the nations just south of Mexico, primarily fueling the large rise in immigration. So Kamala and Joe, they're bragging about how, well, we've got to go down there, we've got to get to the root cause, we've got to stop it down there, we've got to work with the leaders down there. Those three presidents or prime ministers or whatever they are in those countries, they didn't show up. They didn't bother coming to this summit. They just snubbed the Biden administration. So this regime, the Biden White House, they're not getting support from anyone, not even any more of their friends in the media. And there is division in this party. This was a clip from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She said this, I believe, yesterday, talking about, she just refused to answer if she would support Joe Biden in the next presidential election. This is clip three.
Before we go, I just want to ask about President Biden. He is saying he's going to run again in 2024. Will you support him?
You know, if the president chooses to run again in 2024, I mean, first of all, I'm focused on winning this majority right now and preserving a majority this year in 2022. So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But I think if the president has a vision, then that's something certainly we're all willing to entertain and examine when the time comes.
That's not a yes.
Yeah, you know, I think we should endorse when we get to it. But I believe that the president has been doing a very good job so far. And, you know, should he run again? I think that I think we'll take a look at it.
Okay.
But right now we need to focus on winning a majority instead of a presidential election.
We'll take a look at it. I love finally CNN just pushing back just ever so slightly. Could you just give a yes or no question? Just clarify your position in AOC and the other radicals in the Democrat Party, the squad, as they're called. They don't want to say it. Oh, we're just worried about the midterms. We'll worry about Joe Biden in 2024. And who knows what's happening here? Who knows what's going on behind the scenes? If Barack Obama said, you know, we're going to pull the rug out from the Biden administration, no more support. I mean, Barack Obama has never liked Joe Biden. I mean, when he came in and he was running, he needed someone that was deeply entrenched in the swamp, and that was Joe Biden. He'd been there for four decades. He needed someone that, you know, you could work with to communicate with the other people who have been entrenched in the swamp for a very long time, whether they were Democrats or Republicans. And Joe Biden happened to be that guy. Barack Obama couldn't stand working with him, as he's admitted before. You know, never underestimate his ability to mess things up. And I've read quite a few of these. Everyone, when the administration ends, they write their biography or their story about how it was working with that administration so they can get their $1 million book deal. And it's funny how often the scene comes up where they're sitting at a round table and nobody asks Joe Biden for his opinion. He just kind of chimes in, room goes quiet, they move on to the next topic. I mean, he was not there because he was best friends with Obama, like Joe Biden tweeted on. It was another corny thing where it was Best Friends Day and Joe Biden posted a picture of a friend's bracelet with Obama and Biden on there. And then you saw it a couple weeks ago where he snubbed him at that White House visit. Joe Biden couldn't even get his attention, grabbing his shoulder, trying to pull him back over, and Obama just cold shoulder. Nothing for the supposed president of the United States. Barack Obama was speaking in Copenhagen on Friday as well. This was a summit about democracy, and Obama gave his idea of what democracy should be and doesn't quote anything, doesn't refer. This is all just coming from his heart, of his view of what democracy should be, and he thinks the United States is just, it's not doing it right simply because Obama says. And in this clip that we'll play for you in a little bit, it's just a highlights of him, again, going after Republicans, talking about the need for more censorship. This is clip number four.
In my own country, the forces that unleashed mob violence on our capital are still churning out misinformation and conspiracy theories. Now, I want to be clear, I have little sympathy for reactionaries who cynically condemn identity politics or cancel culture, when really all they're doing is trying to preserve existing privilege or excuse entrenched injustice or bigotry. I mean, the original identity politics is racism and sexism and homophobia. That's nothing if not identity politics. And it's done a lot more harm than some tweet from an aggrieved liberal. Finally, as we do all these things, we have to take steps to detoxify our discourse, particularly the scourge of disinformation and conspiracy theories and hate. online that has polluted our political discourse.
And how he's being a bit crafty and how he words all of that. Again, the forces that unleashed mob violence on our Capitol. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But that bit in the middle where he says, you know, the people who are condemning identity politics and cancel culture, well, they're just trying to excuse entrenched injustices, as in cancel culture and the identity politics. That's all a good thing, trying to address real problems in the United States. And Republicans and conservatives, they're just obsessed over a tweet from a liberal. He always does it. He downplays serious problems. I mean, he did it with Loudoun County. He just called that the phony culture wars, that those parents were upset that their daughter was raped by a transgender who got to walk into the girl's bathroom. Barack Obama says that's just the phony culture wars. Tucker Carlson called him out, called him a heartless monster. He's doing it again. Well, they just obsess over a tweet from an aggrieved liberal. He's taking aim, I assume, at accounts like that Libs of TikTok who follow what's happening in America's schools and just reposts it on their account. And it's disgusting what's happening in America's schools. How many transgender drag queen dance shows there are for children in the United States. And he just says, well, it's just conservatives blowing something out of proportion. Then he gallingly says, we have to detoxify our discourse, particularly the scourge of disinformation and conspiracy theories and hate online that has polluted our political discourse. Well, what's his solution there? What does he want to do? Probably the Ministry of Truth. Bring back Nina Jankowicz. Following in line with this, they all want their censorship. You're not allowed to talk about January 6th. By the way, they're having another hearing this morning. The one last Thursday night was a bit of a flop as far as viewership. And they had it on every big network except Fox News, and they couldn't even break the regular nightly viewership for those networks. But talking about censorship, talking about January 6th, I thought this was a story that came up last week. This was a coach. He's the defensive coach for the Washington Redskins. His name is Jack Del Rio. And he said in this clip, you know, why are we so obsessed about January 6th, but we won't say anything about the riots of 2020? This is clip 5.
And I think we all, as Americans, have the right to express ourselves, especially if you're being respectful. I'm being respectful. I just asked a simple question. Really, let's get right down to it. What did I ask? A simple question. Why are we not looking into those things? If we're going to talk about it, why are we not looking into those things? Because it's kind of hard for me to say I can realistically look at it. I see the images on TV. People's livelihoods are being destroyed. Businesses are being burned down. No problem. And then we have a dust up at the Capitol. Well, there's nothing burned down. And we're not going to talk about, we're going to make that a major deal. I just think it kind of two standards. And if we apply the same standard and we're going to be reasonable with each other, let's have a discussion. That's all it was. Let's have a discussion. We're Americans. Let's talk it through.
Nothing he said in that clip was wrong. And if you want to honestly sit down and talk about it point by point, nothing he said in that clip is wrong. Democrats brag about the mostly peaceful protests of 2020. Well, only 4% of the protests turned into riots. Well, that 4% ended up costing $2 billion in damages, costing about 34 people their lives, and thousands of people their livelihoods. And there wasn't a single hearing about any of those riots. So any average person would think, wow, they just excused cities being burned down. Nothing about Kamala Harris bailing out the rioters in Minneapolis. So he says, January 6th, there were no fires. They say there was $1.5 million in damage done to the Capitol. I think that's just totally being blown out of proportion because someone wants to get their – I bet a lot of those contractors just want a nice payday so they can bill the government for it. $1.5 million of damage, a couple doors. I don't know what else there would be that would cost that much money. But everything Del Rio says there, absolutely right. No fires. Nothing was destroyed. The crime was that you're attacking Nancy Pelosi's office. But if you attack average Americans' homes and their businesses, that's okay. Totally permitted. Burn it down. It's all for George Floyd. But if you come to our house and you're protesting, that's an insurrection. You're a domestic terrorist, no matter what you're aggrieved about or what your grievance is. Del Rio, for that soundbite I played there, was fined $100,000 by the head coach of the Redskins, who is a hardcore liberal, thinks probably exactly the same way Barack Obama does. I've never heard of a fine that steep in the NFL for something that wasn't violent. There was an instance where a Bears player got fined that amount for some dumb sponsorship rule. But $100,000 for thinking the wrong thoughts and voicing those thoughts. This is the statement from the coach, and this is peak Orwellian. This is what Coach Ron Rivera said. He said, "Coach Del Rio's comments do not reflect the organization's views and are extremely hurtful to our great community. As we saw last night in the congressional hearings, what happened on the Capitol on January 6, 2021 was an act of domestic terrorism. A group of citizens attempted to overturn the results of a free and fair election. And as a result, lives were lost and the Capitol building was damaged." Ooh. Who lost their lives on January 6th? On that day, 5 Trump supporters, 2 of them killed by Capitol Police. One of them shot point blank through the throat and the other one beaten with a baton. And there's nothing about that in the hearings. Coach Ron Rivera won't say who was killed. Continuing from his statement, "Coach Del Rio did apologize for his comments on Wednesday, and he understands the distinction. We have educated him. We have taught him how to think. He understands the distinction between the events of that dark day and peaceful protests, which are a hallmark of our democracy." He says he does have a right to voice his opinion. However, words have consequences, and his words hurt a lot of people in our community. I want to make it clear that our organization will not tolerate any equivalency between those who demanded justice in the wake of George Floyd's murder and the action of those on January 6th who sought to topple our government. Never mind the federal courthouses that were attacked in Portland. Never mind that they tried to set up an autonomous zone in Seattle. That would mean a separate entity, a separate country on its own. That was not an insurrection at all. Never mind the protests at the Supreme Court during the Kavanaugh hearing where they entered the offices protest, but they entered the offices of Chuck Grassley, not dissimilar from the protesters that went into Nancy Pelosi's office. You better not think the wrong thoughts. Del Rio now understands. We fined him $100,000, and he now thinks the way we think. And he would never, ever again say that $2 billion is the same as Grandma walking through the Capitol on January 6th. And these are the people that want red flag laws for you to own a gun. These are the people that say that's common sense gun reform. You know exactly what will happen if those red flag laws are implemented. Well, that was the wrong tweet. I'm going to call the police on him. They just come and confiscate the guns, and then you go to trial to try to get them back. It's this trend has been happening actually the last couple weeks. It's called swatting, where people will make anonymous phone calls about someone they don't like, and they will tell the police that a murder or a crime is being committed at this home, and a truck of SWAT agents will arrive at this home, put people on the ground, arrest them. It takes hours to sort out. And it keeps happening. And the police obviously are finally catching on that this is a joke, but they have to answer to these calls. So they're finally trying to trace back where it's coming from to arrest those people for making those false reports. But what's a red flag law going to do if they assume the person complaining is right, they take your guns, and then now you have to spend your time and your money to try to get them back? And by the way, if you want to talk about red flag laws and all the guns on January 6th, well, these are supposed to be the Second Amendment-loving domestic terrorists. They're coming for their to carry out the insurrection on the Capitol, and none of them have guns? Just a protest that got out of hand. And to be sure, there were FBI informants. There were people there egging them on, funneling these people into the Capitol. Again, on this double standard of justice, there is this protest group in Idaho. They're called Patriot Front. And they're that mysterious group that just appears places, and they all come out of the back of a U-Haul. Looks very suspicious. They were planning a protest in Idaho, and as soon as they got out of the truck, they're all arrested. Well, it turns out that they have informants, FBI informants in that group that tipped off the police, and the police rush over there and arrest all of these guys. Now, I don't know what their affiliations are. I don't know who they actually are, but isn't that amazing that this group, agree with them or disagree with them, they were planning a protest, and they get arrested before they can even protest. Whereas Antifa, Jerry Nadler says they don't even exist. BLM, all of them can plan and plan and plan, and everyone knows months in advance or weeks in advance that it's coming, and the police just let it happen. In Oregon, there was another pregnancy center that was firebombed by pro-abortion activists. This is from the website Live Action. It says, a pro-life pregnancy center in the area of Gresham, Oregon, was firebombed in the early morning hours of June 11th, making this the fourth known arson committed against pro-life organizations since the leaked Supreme Court draft opinion. So four of these facilities are firebombed, destroyed, acts of terror, and the DOJ doesn't issue any sort of statement on it. It's organized groups carrying out terrorist attacks in the United States, but they're left-wing, so that's okay. This country is just descending into madness. Leviticus 26 and verse 16. I will also do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror. This country is being cursed. There's no righteous law there. The justice is not being carried out. There's the double standard of justice. And there are violent and bloody crimes happening in this land. And it's only going to get worse because those in charge keep excusing it. Ezekiel 7, verse 23, make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes, and the city is full of violence. Well, I wanted to hit on this article in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend. It's titled, Cannabis and the Violent Crime Surge. And they start out this article talking about a revision the New York Times made when it was writing about the school shooter in Uvalde, Texas. And they removed a line from their article that talked about his heavy addiction to marijuana. And then they point out how this fits a pattern of a lot of these mass shooters. This is what the journal writes. They say, assuming the detail was accurate, it would fit a pattern. Mass shooters at Representative Gabby Giffords' constituents meeting in Tucson, a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida, the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, were reported to be marijuana users. It could be a coincidence, but increasing evidence suggests a connection. Now, they talk about how marijuana is being legalized in many states, and it's getting a lot more potent in the way that it's made. And it is a hallucinogenic, that chemical, that THC in there. And they note that, you know, obviously not everyone that does marijuana is going to be a school shooter, but a lot of the school shooters, by this article, the majority of them have marijuana addictions. They write, marijuana nowadays on average is about four times as potent as it was in 1995. As they use the drug more frequently to satisfy cravings, they develop psychological and social problems. They write that chronic marijuana use permanently rewires the brain. This is from the National Institute of Health. People who have taken large doses of the drug may experience an acute psychosis, which includes hallucinations, delusions, and a loss of the sense of personal identity. They talk about how this cannabis-induced psychosis is becoming a bigger and bigger problem in states where it's legalized. They're just taking so much of it now, and it's so much more potent than it used to be, that it's rewiring people's brains, causing them to have these schizophrenic outbursts, personality disorders. They say, well, how come it's not happening in Western Europe where weed or marijuana is being legalized? And they say, it is. A study from Denmark last summer found that schizophrenia cases associated with pot addiction have increased 3 to 4-fold over the past 20 years. Scientists in a recent study reviewed scans of teenagers' brains before and after they started using pot. They found that parts of the brain involved in decision-making and morality judgments were altered in pot users compared to non-users. Also worrisome, legalization seems to be leading to more pregnant women using pot. About 20% of pregnant young women in California tested positive for marijuana in 2016. THC crosses the placenta and can impair neurological development. The journal writes, maybe it's time that lawmakers and voters rethink their pot legalization experiment before more young lives are damaged. So what a horrible brew of events in the United States. You have lockdowns, you have people addicted to screens, they're not socializing, they're lonely, then they're addicted to mind-altering drugs, and then the reality of it is they can get guns. And this country is just a powder keg, and we have to see that there is a spiritual element to all of this, that there is a spiritual war going on for control of the mind. Ephesians 2 and verse 2 talks about a spirit that works in the children of disobedience. Ephesians 6 and verse 12, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Now, what do you think is happening when those kids, when that 18-year-old kid in Uvalde is totally drugged out and his mind is altered and he doesn't have a father around and he's bullied, and all of these problems are happening and no one wants to address each of them? They just want to talk about the gun and take it away from law-abiding people, but no one gets to the root cause, the spiritual crisis in the United States. If you want to read more about just the harmful and horrible effects of marijuana, we have an article at The Trumpet by Mr. Wick Hirma. It's titled, What's Wrong with Marijuana? And he talks about how this drug, I mean, it destroys the body. It destroys the mind. Kind of following in that vein, there's another article in the Wall Street Journal talking about the opioid epidemic in the United States. Over 100,000 people killed from drug overdoses. And this is primarily a problem that hits rural America. We hear a lot about the violence in cities, and a lot of that is carried out by gang members. A lot of that happens because the prosecutors and the attorneys in those cities won't put the bad guys in jail. They won't crack down on the gangs. So the cycle perpetuates. It just keeps going. They're out of jail as soon as they're arrested. But in rural America, they're experiencing a different problem. There aren't gangs. It's not easy to solve this problem or to find where it's coming from. But this journal article says, rural America reels from violent crime. And it talks about these small counties in the United States, in Montana and South Carolina. The counties of, 50,000 people are seeing murder rates just skyrocket. And these aren't gangs. These are just people that, from the lockdown, they're isolated, they're on drugs, are committing violent crimes. and there's no apparent motive. There's no, you know, there's not a gang. There's not a gang feud between the two of them. I mean, the title of it is "People Have Lost Their Evan Love or Their Minds," pretty much. This is quoting from some of the sheriffs in these counties. They speculate that the breakdown of deeply rooted social connections that bind together many small communities, coupled with the stress of the pandemic, played a role. And you throw in the drug addiction as well. The journal writes, veteran law enforcement officials said they had never before witnessed the level of violence of these past 2 years. This article is horribly gruesome. It's awful what is happening in some of these communities. These sheriffs talk about how they get home from work and they just cry. A father killing his 5-year-old daughter and then shooting himself. And they are going in. These are counties where they have a murder maybe every 10 years, and now they're having to deal with 10 or 15. And there is just crime and violence, or instability all throughout this country. They reference a few counties here and talk about domestic violence incidents reaching an all-time high in 2020. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is it's not just cities. It's not just the bad government in cities. Mankind has a problem. The United States and Britain especially have a problem. Human nature is the problem here. They say prosecutors in rural areas have struggled to identify motives behind many of the murders. It's just sporadic. It's unpredictable, and they're struggling to deal with it. This country is being cursed in every area. You can't escape those curses. I want to read Deuteronomy 28 for you, just a portion of it. This is the blessings and cursings chapter. It says, cursed shall you be in the city, this is verse 16, and cursed shall you be in the field. Cursed shall be your basket and your store. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body and the fruit of your land, the increase of your kine and the flocks of your sheep. Cursed shall you be when you come in, and cursed shall you be when you go out. The Lord shall send upon you cursing, vexation, and rebuke, and all that you set your hand unto for to do, until you be destroyed and until you perish quickly because of the wickedness of thy doings whereby you have forsaken me. This nation is being cursed for disobeying God, and you can't run away from it. You can't run to that outpost out in the woods and think, well, I'll be safe out here. The cities won't touch me. Verse 28 says, the Lord shall smite you with madness and blindness and astonishment of heart. That word mindness means wild panic, craziness, no soundness at all in this nation, as it says in Isaiah 3. This nation needs God. It needs to understand the spiritual dimension behind these problems. It needs to understand that the world is cut off and Satan is the God of this world. And you can see it by a lot of these curses and how they line up with Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. You can identify the modern descendants of Israel by those blessings that it says, this is the promise that I've made to Abraham. You can see those blessings happen in the year surrounding 1800. And then you can also identify these nations by the curses that are listed in there. The pride of your power. You had to have power, and now you don't have pride in it. Strangers within thee. The self-hate in the United States and Britain. These are curses that are specific to our peoples. Well, our tagline at The Trumpet is tomorrow's news today. And a few shows ago, I talked about those points to help you understand Bible prophecy. And I'd like to just, in the remaining minutes here, hit on point number one of that. And Bible prophecy, it is a tool that God gives to us. Christ said to watch and to pray, and he gave us a list of things to look for that would happen before his return. And that first point in that article, You Can Understand Prophecy, is titled, or the first point is, prophecy is dual. Isaiah 41 and verse 22 reads, Let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things what they be, that we may consider them and know the latter end of them, or declare us things for to come. This article, titled, again, You Can Understand Prophecy, says many of the past partially fulfilled prophecies still have an end time fulfillment. A perfect example of this is the Olivet prophecy. And he goes on to quote Matthew 24. And a lot of people will look at that chapter and say, well, that was fulfilled in Jerusalem in AD 70, and it's not for our time today. But that's not an honest reading of that chapter. There are events in there that did not happen in AD 70, namely that Christ returned, and he's giving a list of things to look for in the lead up to his return. That is Bible prophecy. And if you believe Christ, if you believe the Bible, you have to admit that is a future event that is being foretold here. Now, those things, in part, parts of them were fulfilled anciently, but the majority of them are for the latter days. That is that principle of duality in Bible prophecy. This is, again, from an article on the Trumpet. We've got quite a few quotes here from material that you can look at. This article is titled, Bible Prophecy is Dual. And it says, a dual prophecy is one that contains two different warnings, a warning for those who lived during the time when the prophecies were delivered, and a warning for the generation to which all aspects of the prophecy apply, for those who live in the end time, as some scriptures phrase it. When scripture says that generation, it is referring to this modern generation. We are in the end time, and we can prove it. In other words, many Bible prophecies have both an ancient and a modern fulfillment. Typically, the ancient fulfillment is a partial fulfillment. So you see a lot of these chapters where there are things that it mentions that did not occur at the time it was written, or did not occur when that prophecy was fulfilled anciently. Mr. Armstrong said 1/3 of the Bible is prophecy, and I believe 90% of that is for our time today. This is from Mr. Gerald Fleury in an article titled Duality in Prophecy. He writes, duality is found throughout Ezra, Nehemiah, Chronicles, Haggai, and Zechariah. Zechariah chapter 3 talks about seven eyes or seven church eras that see what God sees. It talks about seven lamps, which is another way to describe these church eras that give light to the entire world. These prophecies are so inspiring, but we can only understand them and their ultimate fulfillment if we truly grasp the vital principle of biblical duality. So that is that first point in that article. You can understand Bible prophecy, understand the point of duality. And he lists through some chapters there where you can see that. Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, the former prophets and the minor prophets. He references Haggai 2 and verse 9 there. I don't have time to explain all of that. Well, I can read that. This is a minor prophet, and God inspired him to write, the glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former, says the Lord of hosts. And in this place will I give peace, says the Lord of hosts. So that second temple, though, wasn't greater than Solomon's temple. So what is that referring to? Mr. Fleury writes that that verse proves there's duality in prophecy. There's a spiritual element to that verse. And if you understand that the church is spiritual, or that spiritual temple, then it makes sense that the latter house is greater than the former. In that reprint article, it says, Bible prophecy is the guide that shows us how God is working things out. We all need to take hold of the great truths locked within Bible prophecy. By believing and heeding these prophecies, you will learn how to escape what is coming upon this earth in the near future, and it will help you get to know God. Well, if you want to request any of the literature on today's show, you can call our phone number, 1-866-930-3024, or you can email us any requests or feedback. You can email us td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. Mr. Stephen Fleury will be back tomorrow. Thank you very much for listening.